as the real estate market continues to have its challenges, certainly in terms of making money on single family or even duplex, triplex type properties in a lot of markets, many investors are looking at multifamily investing. And my guests this week, Jen and Stacey Conkey, are experts in helping people succeed in multifamily investing. We have a very wide-ranging topic and conversation around remote investing, joint ventures, syndication, mastering the ability to go from single family investing to multifamily, both from a tactical point of view, but then also very much from a mindset perspective. So I think you're going to find this whole conversation very helpful in terms of your investing journey and marketing yourself as a real estate investor. And stick around to the end, because Jen and Stacey make an offer with regards to one of their programs where you can access some of their training for free. So have a listen and enjoy the show. Thanks. Welcome to the Real Estate Investor Content Marketing Podcast, where we help you build a private following of investors to finance your next real estate investment project. We're here to show you how to create content that people can't ignore and that turns your real estate investing business into a standout success. In each episode, we'll explore the secrets of content marketing for real estate investors. We'll chat with smart people, give you useful tips, and share success stories from others who've mastered content marketing in their real estate investing businesses. We'll cover topics like writing articles, blog posts, ebooks, video, podcasts, email, marketing, online education, social media, graphics and images, and of course, AI. If it's content, we'll have the experts and the insights you'll need. Whether you're learning to tell compelling stories, figuring out social media, or growing your real estate investing business through content, you're in the right place. And now, on with the show.
Okay, Jen, Stacey, thank you for joining us today. Multifamily, I think it's a big topic nowadays. I mean, certainly from where I sit up here in Ontario, people just can't make things happen with a single family home. You know, the duplex, triplex thing, even that's sometimes a bit of a stretch. And I think people are starting to think, okay, what else is out there? And a multifamily seems a very logical thing. And then I think as well is, you know, in certain provinces, you know, people are just not looking at the tenant laws and everything else and saying, this is not working. So they want to look south of the border. So tell us a little bit about what you do for multifamily in the multifamily space and what people need to know about and what they should be considering if they're thinking about making that transition from the smaller residential investing suddenly to multifamily. I've heard a lot of people say, oh, you just put a couple of zeros on the end, but I'm sure it's a lot more than that. So.
It is. Yeah. I think that, first of all, I think we have a lot in common, because when we first started investing, we started in California on separate timeframes, because we've only, you know, been investing together for almost 9 years now. But in the beginning, investing from California and not being able in our own backyard to find anything that would cash flow. So I completely understand what the problems are that they're facing. So for us, I didn't know that there was any possible way, but ironically, Stacey learned how to do remote investing from a mentor that lived in Canada.
Oh, yeah,
because
that's right.
He was facing the same circumstance.
And he was in Toronto.
Yeah, he was in the Toronto area. So I feel like you could probably answer a little bit better about how we came to be and what we provide with our blueprint. But we invest from where we live anywhere in the U.S. because we were facing those same circumstances 20 years ago, even in the U.S. on the coast. You know,
right.
West is where we spend our time. Yeah, I don't know what you...
Yeah, I think that to your question of like, what should people be looking at when they're just trying to get started? You know, we were, you know, looking at, we were getting further into apartment investing, and we started like looking at different education platforms because we wanted to like go bigger or make more money. So we're like, how do we up our game? And what we found is that all of the commercial real estate education out there, everyone really pushed, oh, just syndicate. Oh, you don't have the capital? No problem. Just syndicate. And it was very sexy because, you know, they're talking about 100, 200, 300 unit properties with very high price tags with high acquisition fees. So we were like, oh, yes, syndication, that's the way. And we already had experience. And what we found was it was a lot more difficult than it sounded in the classroom and a lot more challenging. So, I mean, we are syndicators now. We have syndicated several deals. But what I find is when someone is just getting started, the main advice I give them, regardless of their location, is, you know what? Start with something that's small, like a 10-unit apartment building, 10 or 20, you know, somewhere between 10 and 20 units, because there is a really significant learning curve when it comes to any new business, including multifamily, even if you've been doing single family, because it could not be more different. The way that properties are valued is completely different in the multifamily space compared to the residential space. Anyway, so the main thing is like, just take the time to like do a smaller deal so you can actually learn start to finish what is it to find, fund, close, and asset manage a deal. And then, you know, stair step into a little bit bigger building, do the same thing. So Jen and I have been pretty vocal in the States about like, you don't need to start with syndication when you're new. What we've seen is everybody who is brand new trying to do their first deal as a syndication, they almost never actually do a deal ever. They never get that first one done.
Why is that?
And so my theory or opinion on it is learning to do an apartment building when you have no experience in doing apartments, that's like a pretty significant learning curve just in and of itself. Okay. Learning syndication is an additional level of complexity, right? There's a lot of different things you have to know and manage, which is fine. When you have some experience, it's still a big learning curve, but at least you've already learned like 80% because you've done just a regular apartment building with a joint venture, something smaller. But I think that's what it is. It's just like, it's just too much. Also, when you're just starting out and you're looking at the big numbers and they look really sexy and you're like, okay, cool. So all I have to do is get, you know, this one and just raise $10 million, no problem. What people sometimes don't realize, because they don't talk about it at the seminars when they're trying to sell the program, is they don't talk about the fact that you better have a very deep Rolodex of people who have capital that want to invest with you. And even if you know people with capital, it's unlikely people are going to want to invest with you when you have no track record to show that you've done what it takes to actually learn the business, you know, and stair stepped it up. So I just think it stacks a lot of things not in the favor of someone new, because you don't have credibility, you don't have confidence, and you don't have any experience. That makes getting the loan difficult. It makes getting investors extremely difficult, you know, and frankly, even if they could pull it across the finish line, which is pretty rare, you know, you're always going to make some mistakes on your first deal, first couple deals, just because you don't know what you don't know. And there's always some random weird thing that comes up that you're like, oh, okay, well, next time I would do this differently. And I think when you can learn those things on a smaller property with a smaller price tag that has a smaller impact on the financials, and then you carry that wisdom forward, the investors that are investing with you are going to be they're better suited. You're being more responsible, in my opinion, by you know what you're doing now, because you made some of the smaller mistakes and the smaller ones. Now you're more prepared to go into a larger property, a syndication with a much bigger track record and that wisdom that comes with it.
I'd like to come back to the mistakes in a second, but Jen, you mentioned, Stacey, that you know the numbers look sexy. I think on the opposite side of that, the numbers can also look very scary. And Jen, I know you focus a lot on mindset. So what are the kind of things that you think people should be addressing from a mindset point of view when they suddenly look at, okay, I'm used to buying a triplex and now I'm buying, you know, so some people, 10 units is going to sound scary. So
yeah, true. That's very true. So, I think that, you know, when I think about my journey and going and trying to figure out how am I going to raise that much money, that was the first daunting number. A large apartment building requires a large purchase price and that requires a large raise. And when it comes from a mindset perspective and folks are a little bit already fearful of if I go into this large asset, how am I going to raise that? I think you have to focus on first booking a win and going and starting smaller is how you do that. So if you look at a smaller size property, something that's, you know, 5 units, even if 5 units is considered an apartment building and it's valued differently than 4 units or less. So even if it was just a 5 unit, like start where you're comfortable, but not necessarily comfortable, but start where you're just outside of your comfort zone. So that if you've been doing single family and now, you know, 2 to 4 units, they're valued the same way as a single family home. So if I want to get into multifamily and I want to do apartments, if I start at 5 units, what would that look like? And for the most part in our academy, those folks that have had those mental barriers and challenges, they start with a 5 to 8 unit. Something that's still in the single digits is a little bit more palpable.
True, right?
To say, oh, maybe I could do that. But start where you are just outside of your comfort zone. And if that's a 5 to 8 unit, that's awesome. Start there. And I think that, you know, you might be surprised at just how much you are capable of doing something, even though it might be right outside of your comfort zone. It's like, you're going to learn there's a path to mastery of something. And that first one is you are unconsciously incompetent. So you don't even know that you don't understand something because you don't understand the thing, right? But then as you learn more and you become consciously incompetent, it's like, well, I got to pick a strategy. Let me pick the one that's going to be, you know, it's still uncomfortable, but I don't want it to be what I feel is beyond my reach. So if you go to the first step and that first step being just a little bit outside of it, you're going to get that competence because you're going to do the thing, you're going to close the deal, and that breeds the competence that you need to keep going. And then the next property, the second property, start it with, you know, 8 to 12 units and maybe just push a little bit towards double digits. And if you double the door count each time, what you're going to see is that not only was I able to close on a single digit, but now I'm going after a double digit. And, you know, this 10 unit, this 12 unit, it's not that much more difficult. It's only 4 or 5 more doors. And I've already proved there's already evidence that I was able to do it on a smaller scale. And if I could use that same strategy that I use on a smaller scale and apply and magnify it to a larger property, I'm probably going to be okay. And it's just the conversation you have to have with yourself and your mind has to be positive and showing yourself the evidence where you have succeeded in the past, because we've all mastered something in our lives and we have a strategy for that. And if we recall that strategy and then apply it to the new thing, all the evidence is stacked in your favor that you're going to succeed at this too.
Right. And what about from adding on a layer to that and investing remotely? A lot of investors might think, yeah, you know, all of a sudden I'm used to driving around the corner and checking on the property, and now I've got to get on a plane or something to do the same thing.
Yeah. The funny part about that is that as a mindset person, a mindset coach and a people coach, I also had that same issue. Ironically, I didn't meet Stacey until 2015, and she's the one who learned the remote investing aspect from that mentor in Toronto. So I think she's probably best poised to answer that. But right. She had to shift my mindset because I wanted to drive around the corner. And what am I going to see? How am I going to know that it got done right? And you know, her first question was, well, are you a certified like contractor? No. Well, how do you even know if it's right? Oh, man, I guess I don't, you know, but I think that she could probably answer that best since I learned it from her.
I think it's definitely more than anything, it is a huge mindset shift. But I think it's because when we are growing up and we are, you know, if our parents are buying a house, we're in the car with the realtor and they're driving. And then when we're buying our house, you're in the, maybe not now, but, you know, now with the internet and everything. But growing up, that was the model, right? You go and you see the house. And since we say house is real estate, it's a natural thing to carry that over into our real estate investments. But the thing is, the example I always give is, let's say we're just sitting here right now, and all of a sudden we start having like drip on our head and we're like, oh no, like the roof is leaking. What are we going to do? Are we going to like go walk outside and start screaming up and down our street? I need a roofer, right? Because we're local, so we must do it that way. No, I think, what are we going to do? We're going to open our computer. We're going to Google roofers in, you know, whatever city. And it's literally the same exact way you do it when you do it remotely. It's just, I think, because we learn about real estate from the standpoint of we see it, it doesn't occur to you that it's the same way you would do it if you're at home. You're going to look up different roofers. You're going to get on the, you're going to talk to them. You're going to interview them. They're going to give quotes. You're going to vet them, get their, you know, license. Well, if you're doing all right, the thing's right. And then you're going to hire them. And the reality is, even if they did the roof, what are you, and you look at it, what are you looking at? If it's a roof, all right, like, we don't know. So when the whole idea is, if you live in a place where the numbers don't work, which, you know, everybody in Toronto is there, all the coasts here, there's a lot of places where it just doesn't work. You really have to shift your mindset to recognize, look, there, we live in a digital age that allows for, it's so easy to remote invest now. I've been remote investing for 20 years and it is infinitely easier now, but it wasn't even possible back then. It takes all of the emotion out of it because you're not there. You're not like, oh, it's so cute or, oh, it's so pretty. It's, for us, it's just like, well, what do the numbers look like? I honestly don't care if it's cute or pretty. This is a business, not a hobby. And what do the numbers look like? And it's easier to do that when you aren't physically, I don't know what the word is, like,
you're not physically in there.
I wonder as well if it takes away the emotional part a little bit as well.
It totally does.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we have one of our members of our academy, Denise. When she started, she lived in New Jersey. She had a couple of duplexes, but prices had just got so high. She's like, I can't keep investing here. And so that's why she came to us, because she wanted to learn the remote part. And so she did. And the first time that she, so she bought some duplexes and kind of got her feet wet there. And then when she went into apartments, the first time she had an apartment building under contract, I think it was like 18 units. Mm-hmm. And she was going through due diligence. And ultimately, based on her due diligence, she ended up backing out. And I remember the comment she made. She's like, this is such an epiphany for me, because I know that if this 18 unit was, you know, at home where I live, I would have had a very difficult time letting it go. And she said, and I just, I really had no emotional attachment. And I don't know what it is about being and seeing it, but it does. It creates like a, I don't know, like this emotional attachment. And so she was like, I was able to just let the deal go. I was disappointed, but I wasn't emotionally attached the way I was to my duplexes in my hometown. Mm. And I was like, okay. I mean, it just takes up the emotional element and allows you to operate more as a business. And we don't get on a plane. Even when you said, you know, oh, I'm going to have to go get on a plane instead of going around the corner. So here's the deal. You can get on a plane and, you know, especially if it's a last minute thing, that plane ticket's going to be very expensive. Hotel, rental car, food, all those things. And what's going to happen when you get there? You're still going to have to open your laptop and use your cell phone and make some phone calls to have the issue solved. Well, how about you just skip all those things and just do it at home? Because when you go into a market, it's not like you're going to have a team. It's one of the first things you do is you build out your team. So you always have team members that aren't involved in whatever the issue is, who you have a relationship with. And they literally can be your eyes, ears, verification for whatever you would go to do. So there's never been a single time in history that we have got on a plane to go to a property ever. There's no, it would be insane. We'd spend $3,000 or $4,000 to do something that we could probably get done for $100. Like, give someone $100, make some phone calls and just solve it. So it's a mindset shift. And when you realize, oh, I can do everything from here, you start realizing there's literally no physical limit. We have Janice, one of our students, or I'd say a member, she's not really a student anymore, but a member of our academy, and she closed properties while being in Egypt. And when she was at the Parthenon.
Yeah. Or is it Pantheon? I don't know how you say that word. But yeah.
She's been all over the world. She's gone on like 30 vacations 30. In the last couple of years. And she loves international travel. And some of them, her closings were happening at the time that she was traveling. And it didn't matter, because you just have a system in place where you have people who are there doing the things. And they're probably more qualified to be giving you feedback than we are.
And they've got the local connection. So if your team is not available or lets you down, then somebody else locally is going to be much more like. It's funny you mentioned the roofer thing. I came across a roofer that differentiates themselves by offering drone confirmations for the fixing the roof. So they'll fly this drone after they fix the roof, and then they'll send you the video.
That's awesome. That's very cool. Yeah, so technology is so different now. So much is possible.
Yeah. And Google, there's people that buy land, isn't there? Just by Google images and figuring it out. Okay. Yeah. That makes total sense. You mentioned earlier mistakes. So what are the kind of pitfalls that somebody coming into multifamily for the first time should be aware of? What are the kind of general or the common mistakes that you see people make?
I think that when people are coming in and they're not educated on how to do it. I think one of the biggest pitfalls is, especially if they're coming from the residential world into commercial world, is not recognizing about the what drives the valuation on a multifamily property that's over 5 units. It is completely different. And so if someone doesn't realize that, they don't necessarily understand how to underwrite the deal properly, and you can end up losing a ton of money, because every move that you make in multifamily over 5 units, the net operating income has this massive impact on the value of the property, at a minimum of 10 times impact. It's usually more in most markets. So every dollar that you are either, you know, increasing the net income of the property or decreasing it can swing your valuation really significantly. So when someone is evaluating a deal, if they don't understand like what moves the needle one way or another, they don't necessarily recognize like that you can pretty easily make a 6-figure mistake, even on a small apartment building. So I think that's the biggest thing. If someone's new, it's like, man, just make sure you really understand and get educated on how to underwrite properly and how to do due diligence correctly and thoroughly. Because once you've closed, it's too late. Like you're just, whenever you didn't find out in due diligence that you find out after, then you just have to deal with it. So I think those are two of the biggest things. Just make sure you really understand how to underwrite the deal and do due diligence.
Yeah.
And are you a local? I mean, I'm sure it's the same in the US, but there's a big push at the moment, lack of housing, which is another reason why multifamily is probably very attractive as an investment vehicle. Are there grants? Are there bonuses? Are there cities or states that are helping people get into, you know, or supporting multifamily investment?
I'm sure there are. That's not really our area of focus, but there's like opportunity zones. There's different things. There's so much red tape with it that we've just chosen to not pursue that. But yeah, I'm sure
there are lots of initiatives out right now where some of our peers that do a different business model, they're doing build to rent for single family homes.
Right.
And we've got a lot of peers that are in construction and new build on multifamily doing just literally erecting A-class apartment buildings. But we focus more on B-class, C-class and existing markets. So it's not something that we really stay on top of in terms of trends and things. But as we're talking to them, there is a very big movement to housing.
Yeah, because I mean, up here, there's a thing called CMHC, which is Canadian Mortgage and Housing. But there are so many. I think the one thing I've heard from investors up here who do multifamily up here is you mentioned the red tape. There are so many hurdles to prove. And then I think you get 90% loan to value or something. It's quite attractive. And the interest rates are they'll even put it out on, which in Canada is really unusual, is I think maybe even a 50-year mortgage, which in Canada is almost unheard of. But then 15% of the units have to be affordable housing, which is well below market rent. And it has, you know, certain percentage has to be accessible. So then there's all these hurdles that then start to make it not a viable. So you said B and C markets. Why focus in that area? What are the attractions of the B and C markets?
For us, there's a lot of upside in those. If they're already established, and you, especially if it's on the outskirts where an A-class property is coming up, it drives values up. And if you can find those pockets where you've got even a B-minus or a C-plus property that you can improve on, you can get in there and stabilize it relatively quickly if it's not already stabilized and cash flowing and add value. It's a lucrative strategy versus going for a new build and new construction. For us, it's longer for our money to be at play, a little riskier. Actually really grateful that we weren't in that business model when it came to COVID and all the supply chain issues. It's just a little bit, you know, we're a little bit more risk averse. We like to be more calculated. And for us, that's the sweet spot. If we did D class, and that's like, we don't really want to be in those neighborhoods, but if C plus to a B minus in that sweet spot, there's a lot of upward, I guess you could say, mobility in terms of adding value to the property and making it more equity for yourself over the long.
Right. And are you finding particular estates are more attractive for multifamily for that kind of investing?
Yes.
Yeah, because there's just like you guys, there's, you know, every state has its own rules and laws. And like California is not only the price is too expensive to make it work, but the laws are awful. They're terrible for landlords. And so it makes it very difficult if you live in California to own any kind of rental property successfully. And New York has a similar reputation. But like Indiana is probably our favorite state because it's so landlord friendly. I think Texas is considered pretty landlord friendly too, but they definitely differ state by state. Indiana's been great. We bought a 96 unit in Kentucky last year, and I think we got a quad, a 4-unit in Ohio. Yes. So most of the Midwest states seem to, you know, work pretty well in our favor.
Money goes further there too.
100%. Yeah.
Yeah. I was talking to a US based investor just recently, and he originally was in Michigan, but he said, you know, 10,000 people are leaving Michigan every year.
Yeah.
And the majority of those would be in the metro areas, particularly Detroit, which is where he was focused. So he said, you know, if you look at it, you buy an apartment building in Detroit, and in 10 years' time, 100,000 people have left that state. So what's the rental value? What's the long-term value of that building versus, and I think he talked about South Carolina is going to be 80,000 new people a year. Take exactly the same building, and in 10 years, it starts to go like this because of the...
When we're doing market research initially, because we don't just randomly pick places, and we don't select an area because of the prices. Obviously, we focused in a like generally in a bigger area because there's lower prices, Midwest primarily. But before we ever make a move into a market, some of the things we're looking for are population growth. So we'll look at like, what is the population growth been over the past 10 to 20 years? And what is it? How's it trending? And job growth. And they tend to go hand in hand. They're usually similar. But yeah. Detroit is one of the market, before I knew about how to research a market, when I first started, Detroit was my second rental market. And I owned a lot of properties in Detroit. And the thing that I learned, you know, later was, wow, now I can almost see why that was not the most successful venture for me. But when someone's new, it seems very compelling because the prices are so low. But right. The taxes and insurance as a percentage of the property price are really high. So like when you're new and you're like, you're hearing about the 1% rule and you don't necessarily know how to actually analyze a deal, you're like, oh, 1%? This is going to be huge cash flow. But if you don't realize that, you know, as a percentage, those particular items are really high in Detroit compared to the purchase prices, it's a challenging place. And especially if you do an apartment building and you have a decreasing population, it's definitely not an ideal thing. But it's the first thing we look at when we're going into new market is population trends and job growth trends to make sure that they're at least holding steady. Ideally, they're going up, but if they're going down, that's a hard no for us. Yeah.
That makes total sense. Yeah. He was talking about doing flips in, you know, right downtown Detroit. And it looks really attractive because you pick up a house for $60,000. He said, but then you're buying three furnaces because the first two are stolen.
That's true.
Boom. All of a sudden, your flip is a $60,000 flip instead of a $30,000 flip. So.
I bought a lot of furnaces in Detroit. It is true too. And I had a property management company there and we did a lot of rehabbing for our clients. And so it just was a huge issue when you're trying to renovate. And the thing is, it's really upsetting, but well, it was at the time. That's a shame. And it's a bummer is you're going in there and you are literally trying to improve neighborhoods by renovating and lifting everyone up. And it's as the investor, especially when you're a new investor, it's like getting kicked in the gut, kicked in the teeth when that happens. And it does, unfortunately. Not everywhere in Detroit, but in certain areas, it was painful, tough.
Right.
Yeah, it's doing a renovation three times before you get a tenant in there is, you know, that's not a good business model, turns out.
Right. Yeah, I would agree. Tell us a little bit about your program, the Academy. You've mentioned it. What could people expect if they were to kind of delve a little bit deeper into what you do?
So we have our academy, we treat, it's like a college education, honestly. The way that it works, the way we have it structured is that when folks first come in that first year, they get access to our online learning platform, it's lifetime access, and we have A to Z training curriculum, partly because we went to so many seminars, so many training companies that at one point I made a joke all the time, I had more binders than I had doors. And you know, those binders fall apart. And when you want to go back and access stuff, it's like, So we set up to disrupt the education space when it came to multifamily and created an entire online learning platform. So they get access to that. They consume those videos. They start with the mindset video because, you know, everything that happens in life is about 80%, 80 to 90% what happens up here. Mm-hmm. We have them go through that, get their mind right. And then they get into the curriculum, start learning it. We have them go through, we're watching them for that first year as they're learning how to pick a market, going into that process, building their pipeline, reaching out to brokers, building relationships, and analyzing underwriting deals, all of those things that they're doing once they're under contract, doing the due diligence, closing on it. And the most important part is watching how they manage it afterwards, because that's where they really make a lot of money. You can make or break the deal long term. And we want them to be super aware and good stewards of the money of their investors. So they've got to know how to manage it right. And there's a lot of training companies here in the US that don't teach that part. They don't teach you how to do that. So we placed a hard emphasis on teaching them A to Z all the way through. So we watch them for that first 12 months. And they usually do about 2 to 3 deals on average in our academy in that first 12 months. And so at the end, during joint venture, at the end of that 12 months, we've been watching and we see, are they following the process or are they taking shortcuts? If they run into a snag or a hurdle, how are they handling that? Are they mentally sharp? Do they have the resilience to get through it? And if they make a mistake, how are they communicating that? And how are they conducting themselves from a business perspective, ethically, from a partnership? Are they proactive in communication? How do they solve problems? And how are they leading that when they're facing a problem? We watch all of it. And at the end of that first year, what we do is we'll make them an offer. If we like what we see and we love it and they're doing really well, we started this business with the intention of helping people, but I also selfishly wanted to create an army of people that can bring deals that we can do together and build a skyline together. So I'll make an offer to them at the end of year one. Do you want to stay with us for years two and three, where we'll teach you syndication and get you into a situation where you're going to scale, learn how to do 506B, 506C, raise capital, all of those things. And then if you accept and you come in, when they're in years two and three, by the time they're done with year three, they never pay tuition again. They're just in with us for life. And we do deals with them if it makes sense, you know, because we do 506C deals. So if it makes sense that the numbers add up, then we also have a capital company and we'll raise capital for deals. And if that deal that the student brings us makes sense and it's a 506C, then we'll get involved and we run it with them. And now we're partners. So it really is a three-year journey, but quite honestly, they get everything they need in that first year and they really don't need to stay for years two and three unless they want to scale and get a system, a right. systemized approach for scaling. And they could do that. They could stay with us and do that. But they could also do it in year one, depending on if they wanted to in year one, do a couple of joint ventures and then start learning syndication. They could learn it from the peers in the network. One of the things that we see, though, is that everybody at the end of year one, they all enroll. We have an 85% continuity, if you will. I don't even know how you say that. But 85% of our students enroll in the years two and three to stay with us. And what we do is by the time they hit year three, they're doing really well. We tell them, hey, you don't ever have to pay tuition again. And for one thing, though, just one thing that we ask in return for that is that you turn around and help all of the people who are new that are joining,
nice.
Help them so that they shortcut that learning curve and get into results faster than you even did. And they're like, yeah, I would love to do that. And they have a pay it forward type of attitude because we tend to attract folks that are abundant focused versus scarcity focused, and they really want to help. And we're also very good at communicating what our personal mission and vision is. We want to help people acquire wealth and change their life in a way that once they accumulate that wealth, they're giving back. If it's monetary, cool. If not, and it's for a cause, or even if it's just to help the other students within the academy. So we truly, and this is not a cliche, we've truly built a family. A lot of people accuse us of building a cult, and I'll say that it is, but it's a cult that's used for good.
Right.
It's not one that's bad. It's very much the culture, really, is what it is. It's a culture of giving back and working together to, I always say, build a skyline together. But it doesn't necessarily have to just be that. It's giving back, whether it be nonprofits or things that you want to do in the world to change what you're passionate about. It's a movement. Our academy is really a movement. And it's cheaper than going to college and getting a student loan. So, you know, it's just for me, when I got out of college, I couldn't monetize my skills. I still am waiting for that, by the way.
Right.
I make more money in real estate. In fact, I paid off my student loans through the cash flow of real estate. So for us, it's we just want to give back and help people understand the full cycle. And the best way to do that is to be in proximity to them.
That's an unusual approach. I think it's a heartening approach. I think it's great. But to almost like a coach to guide to partner, isn't it? It's
yes. kind of
transition. And then you're much more likely to want to give back because you've just experienced that for 3 years. And now, yeah, I love it.
Exactly.
So how can people find out more about it? Where should they best find you?
The best thing would be to go to warriorsofwealth.com. We've curated, I think it's like 7 to 8 videos that are blueprint. It'll teach you. I think the very first one at the top is apartment acquisition accelerator training. We just have our best free training out there that it's the blueprint of what we do. And throughout that time, if you go to warriorsofwealth.com, access the training, start watching it. If you think, oh, I really want to be a part of this, there's a button where you can book a call to explore joining the academy.
Wonderful. We will make sure that is in the show notes. And Jen, Stacey, thank you for joining us today. Really have opened my eyes a little bit more to multifamily, and particularly multifamily south of the border. It's great. So I think people will find this helpful. And have yourself a brandtastic day. Thank you.
You too. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul.